500 grand was for equipment, I think, for the introductory cell biology lab, I think, we bought microscopes and the like on that. The thing that the thing that does not ever get mentioned in these official histories or in catalogs is that we were running half of our teaching, namely the senior research. We were running half of our teaching, the senior research, strictly on grant support. I used to joke and say this is federal aid to education. We could not have managed to do research with our seniors unless there was an NIH or NSF grant to support us. Interesting thing is that it was one of these things that, well, people must have known. I mean, administrations must have known that this is the case. All they would have to look at the spending partner and they'd find that two-thirds, maybe four-fifths of the spending was subsidized by our grants. And that since the research was involved in teaching, therefore the grants were helping us teach our students. I have a feeling it was sort of an uncomfortable subject, you know, just to sort of admit that our students were funded by the federal government.
Because of the Quaker feeling that there might be some association with defense and...
Possibly, or possibly, I think, no administration wants to admit that they are not supporting all or most of the teaching that goes on, you know. But, we sort of shrugged our shoulders. We said, well, fine. They know it, we know it. We don't have to make a point of it. But that issue is still with us.
Yes.
I mean, this year, we're unbelievably lucky. Mel has a grant, Judy has a grant, Carl has a grant, Phil Manili has a grant, and I have a grant. The sixth are part-time people. The moment. So all the full-time permanent appointments, I don't mean Slavica, who has a part-time appointment, and Kate Heston, who has a part-time appointment, but the full-time appointment, all five full-time appointment people have grants, which is pretty amazing considering.
Did you have to write those grants pretty much yourself?
Yes.
You didn't have the development department or any of that business in the early days?
At the universities, of course, you get real help. There's a whole office with people there and so on. No, we wrote the grants ourselves. And it was easier. It wasn't such a big deal. I remember writing a grant during the summer, a month part-time. These days, you're honing it and rewriting it and sending it around and getting criticism and so on. It was amazing. In 1963, I spent 7 months in Yugoslavia. This is where I met Slavica, invited her to come to Helga. And they would ask me about, funding situations. And when I would explain them what was going on, they would look at me and say, we didn't know paradise existed, because it was unheard of. And and then, the war in Vietnam became more and more serious. And at first Johnson thought guns and butter, but then later on, 65 choices had to be made between guns and butter. And, ever since, I think you can look, when you look at the spending, and the support of federal, support of research by the federal agencies, ever since then, it's been tapering off. It's been harder to do. It's been more restricted and so on.
There's a nice little article about how you got Slavica. There's a wonderful picture of her. This photocopy doesn't do her justice, but this was 30 years ago.
For heaven's sakes, when was that?
65. And I had this very complicated and very very complicated equipment, which I'm sure today you have in a back closet somewhere, but these...
No. Well, in part, yes.
Yeah. But you had worked in Yugoslavia, and you needed to have the services of somebody with her skills, and you enticed her to the United States. Is this what happened?
Well, we shared an office, so I got to know her.
Was it the university? Was this in Zagreb?
Yeah.
In Croatia.
It was an institute of atomic energy, so to speak, but they had a good-sized modern biology department. I went there. I don't know whether you would consider it relevant. I went there because the year before 62, I was on sabbatical at Berkeley. Time to think, time to talk to people. And Kennedy came in, and before he knew it, he had the Bay of Pigs invasion. And I got so angry and fed up and thought, if this is important, of what is going to continue to happen in this country. And people said, well, why are you so angry? I would say, look, lots of horrible things happen in underdeveloped countries, but you usually can't do anything about it. But for us to go and do it to them, you know, is unacceptable. And so I thought to my then wife, I talked to her and I said, well, let's go somewhere. Let's take off. Go somewhere. Live in a different country. And the whole question is where, you know? Where is it better, you know? And in those days, Yugoslavia was there was this triumvirate of non-aligned countries. Nero in India, Tito in Yugoslavia, and what's his name in Egypt?
Nasser
in Egypt. Was it before Nasser? What was before Nasser? No, that was the king.
King Farouk?
No, it must have been Nasser.
It might have been Nasser.
Yeah, I wasn't that happy about Egypt, but anyway, to me Yugoslavia seemed interesting because they had turned their back on the Russians and they had instituted these workers' councils and they claimed to have a democratic society, that Tito just controlled foreign policy and defense and nothing else, and everything else was done locally, and it was really more democratic than anything else you have in the world. So I thought I'd go there and see for myself, and I spent 7 months there. So that's why I went to Lhasa.
Let me ask you a couple of things about outside of getting away from biology and the science a little bit, just ask you about the college. During about the first 10 years you were here, and you've already made a couple of comments about Gilbert White, and there were a number of issues that were going on in those days having to do with the size of the college, which Gilbert had a lot of opinions on. He believed in a smaller college. And this was the time also of the Phillips bequest, which began, I think, in 1951, and you've also mentioned. And maybe you can just comment on other issues that were going on. And, of course, after 1956, when Hugh Borton took over, there was also a whole set of other issues that involved students and the role of the faculty, but maybe you can comment about the way the campus was in the 50s.
Yeah. Well, it was really a very, very different college. Gilbert believed in running the college on a shoestring and putting whatever was left into education. Mm-hmm. He clearly felt that education was its main mission, and that's where the money should go. So, if you can think, you know, look at the staffing, for instance. There was a president and a dean. Bill Cadbury was the dean. And the dean's duties, though, I don't want to imply that given the complexity of modern society and all everything else, that the dean did all the things that the present people who replace him did, but nevertheless, if you look at the dean and the, you know, the, if you did a diagram, here you had the dean and one secretary, the president and one secretary. That was it. Now you have a provost, and you have, I don't know, six or seven deans. And Bill, in addition to the deaning, was a pre-medical advisor and was a nationally known one. He wrote a book on that. So he took the pre-medical advisor very seriously. He was the pre-medical advisor, in addition to being dean. He also had a one-quarter appointment in chemistry. He taught the physical chemistry class. And I think it's indicative. I'm not even trying to say this is better than what we have now. I have some concerns about that. But I think it's indicative of what happened, not just to Haverford, but every other education institution in the college. Mm-hmm. It got more complicated. It also got much, much more heavily, whatever word you want to use, bureaucratized or administratized or mm-hmm. whatever. So that was one trend that went on at Haverford. The other one was that we went from benevolent dictatorship to a president who was Hugh Borton, was a decent and lovely human being, but had trouble making decisions, never tried to control anything, let everything happen. Mm-hmm. To the point that the faculty felt that we weren't getting any leadership. And so we organized a little mini-revolt. It was short-lived, but what we did is we called an AUP meeting, since we felt we couldn't use the framework of the faculty meeting to discuss these things. We called an AUP meeting and we said, we've got to do something. And so that's how the Academic Council and the committee systems developed.
Yeah.
It's essentially was created then and went on unchanged until now.
Yeah. I mean, people actually credit Borton because of his weakness, in leading the college towards a path where the faculty had more authority.
Oh, yeah.
Because under Gilbert White, he followed really the time-honored tradition that goes back well before Sharpless, where the faculty, the president, hired the faculty and went to Europe and did pretty much the way you were hired. You may have been the last one hired that way, actually. That Borton, because of his way of doing things, actually it led to that kind of consultative committee system. What about the Phillips bequest? This is something where I know when we interviewed Lewis Green and Bill Cadbury, they talked about this at length as being crucially important to especially the sciences.
Yeah.
And maybe you could comment about how the Phillips visitors, the program, helped the biology program.
Yeah, well, it's the single most important thing that happened as a single thing. In fact, I would think that it's because of the Phillips program that I stayed at Haverford. Mm-hmm. I found it very, very stimulating and exciting. If you look at the list of people we've had, it's like It's a who's who in biology. A bunch of them became, picked up the Nobel Prize after they became visitors. In fact, we've joked to prospective visitors and said, well, you know, a certain percentage of Haverford visitors get the Nobel Prize. So it was very important, but not only the visitors, but also with journals, because we had a lousy journal collection until the Phillips thing came. Bryn Mawr always had a good one, but we had nothing. So I think the journal collection was important. The rare book thing, Gilbert White simply ignored. He acted as if it wasn't there. He just didn't want to know about it because he thought this was sort of thrill, you know. And then there was this pornographic collection that he simply dispensed with. I think the butler sold it.
I know a bit about it. We never received it. He did. It did exist.
It did exist, and Ralph Sargent ran over when he found out about it, just to see what it contained, maybe to save some of the books. But apparently the butler had disposed of it.
Never found out what happened.
Yeah. Somebody just simply got rid of it.
But the story was that Gilbert White and his wife went to see William Pyle Phillips up in his apartment in a hotel in New York, and they had seen a show like Oklahoma, one of the first run Broadway shows, and then they went up to have drinks, and that's where Mr. Phillips showed the Whites this collection of erotica, and Gilbert White could not imagine how a college like Haverford could ever accept that collection. So, and for years late afterwards, students have thought that the library director was hoarding the collection.
Wish he had.
Yes, but the other thing that I've learned, I think maybe from lunch conversation with you and others, is that the Phillips visitors stayed a long time when they came. They didn't come for a day or two. They came and stayed for weeks sometimes.
There were patterns, different patterns. And for instance, chemistry has them longer than our usual two-day visit. I'm not sure how physics works it, but then we had Phillips visitors who actually gave courses. As I mentioned, my father-in-law gave a whole course in advanced mathematics. So, and I think we used the Phillips program once or twice that way. But I think the short visit is still the pattern.
Right. And in addition to the Phillips program, there's an article by Faye Selov, of course you know, not in biology, but a science person. And she was talking about why the Haverford science program was so successful, and she was writing in the 60s. And she talks about some of the things that you've mentioned, but the faculty who are interested in teaching and research, and she mentions the quality of the students, and I'll ask you about that too, and the Phillips program. And she also talks about the importance of the what she calls metropolitan facilities, and by that she really means the University of Pennsylvania and other research institutions. And I wonder if that was important for you, these other institutions in your own program and research and
not at first. In fact, I haven't collaborated until fairly recently. Somebody at the Cancer Institute, Fox Chase, and I collaborate with somebody at Hahnemann Medical School. There hasn't been too much. Mel now collaborates with somebody who is at Yale. But it has never been a major thing with us. Not sure why it could. In fact, we received a grant that involved spending jointly money, and it was all right, but it didn't stimulate learning. Right. It wasn't pursued very much. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It could.
But in other sciences, apparently, there must have been more collaborations of this kind, or say in physics or chemistry.
I think in physics, very definitely collaborated with people at Penn. Her husband. Her husband is a professor at Penn. Julia DePaula has collaborated with Pasternak at Swarthmore. But I'm not so sure that chemistry has done much in the way of collaboration, and physics may have more. But it's a strange business. If we had had less opportunity to do research here, we might have compensated for it by doing more collaboration.
Right. Tell me a little bit about the students, the kind of students that you found in those first 10 or 15 years you were here. Were they able to do, they were able students academically, but did they have particular qualities? That
well, I really lack a basis of comparison. But our students have been wonderful. I've had some very productive, literally collaborations with students who worked in my lab. Some of them are distinguished people in their own right now. One of them, in fact, Dahlberg, Jim, yeah, the Dahlberg, is a professor at Brown, and Mel has in fact collaborated with him.
Would you like me to get you a glass of water?
Maybe.
Yeah, let me cut the tape.